This is NPR's Weekend Edition. I'm Scott Simon. Quick now, who's the all-time baseball home run champion? Well, perhaps you guessed Hank Aaron, but if you didn't, that is because one of the greatest athletes of all time has been quietly almost overlooked since the April evening 25 years ago when he broke Babe Ruth's career home run record. But Hank Aaron's chase against the ghost of the Babe grew into a much larger struggle. It touched a good many more people than perhaps even he knew at the time. Sandy Tolan was one.
When I was a kid, I had three heroes. My dad, Bart Starr, the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, and the man who played right field in my hometown, Henry Aaron of the Milwaukee Braves. Hammer and Hank, number 44, the ball player with the quickest wrists, who could hit a line shot past the pitcher's ear, a smash that would carry over second base, and like a frozen rope out beyond the center field wall. When the Braves left town after the 1965 season, I was nine and crushed. A lot of Milwaukee had gotten so angry with the Braves' owners, they weren't going to root for this old team that was abandoning us for Atlanta. People started rooting for the Chicago teams, the Cubs and the White Sox. Not me. In that first lonely season after they left us, desperate for news of Hank and the Braves, I scoured the AM radio dial night after night.
Cornucopia of.
And finally, I came up with a station in Nashville.
Of the Grand Ole Opry, 650 WSN.
It's 1-0 Atlanta. Runner at first, Henry Aaron. He's the first base runner on either side.
We'd listen like that, summer after summer, in the muggy Wisconsin nights. I'd lie in the living room rug with a scorecard, keeping track of hits, walks, strikeouts, home runs for all the Braves. Rico Carty, Dusty Baker, Ralph Garr, and the Hammer.
The 2-1 pitch to the Hammer. Into the dirt, a ball.
In 1970, we got our own team in Milwaukee again, the Brewers. They were terrible, but I became a loyal fan. Always, though, I had an eye south on Hank and his team. As the years went on, Hank's homers piled up, and by the early 70s, it seemed he had a chance to break the greatest record in sports, the career home run total held by the Sultan of SWAT, Babe Ruth. What a great thing that would be. But then I read an article in the Sporting News. Aaron slurred as he assaults Ruth's mark. Hank had begun to get hate mail and death threats.
Dear Henry Aaron, how about some sickle cell anemia, Hank?
Whites are far more superior than jungle bunnies.
You are not going to break this record established by the great Babe Ruth if I can help it. My gun is watching your every black move.
I was so upset. I wanted to do something. I started a scrapbook chronicling Henry's homers in the countdown to 7:15, and I wrote Hank a letter. I said something about, "Don't listen to them, Mr. Aaron. We're in your corner. You're my hero. I believe in you." I expected perhaps a postcard back. "The Atlanta Braves, thank you for your interest." Instead, in late June 1973, I got a personal letter from Henry Aaron. He was in the midst of the chase, some 25 homers away, but he took the time to write this young fan up in Milwaukee. "Dear Sandy," my hero wrote me, "I want you to know how very much I appreciate the concern and best wishes of people like yourself. If you will excuse my sentimentality, your letter of support and encouragement meant much more to me than I can adequately express in words."
It is very heartwarming to know that you are in my corner. I will always be grateful for the interest you have shown in me as the so-called countdown began.
1999, and I am sitting next to Henry Aaron, senior vice president of the Atlanta Braves, listening to him read from the letter he sent me 26 years ago.
"Wishing you only the best, I am most sincerely Hank Aaron."
My hand is wrapped around a microphone, slippery with sweat. For a moment, I can't think of anything to say.
Aside from the fact that you were my hero when I was little, and now I've grown up to be a reporter, I feel like I'm sort of here for two reasons, you know. Get a chance to meet you as well. Yeah, really. And
he looks at me patiently. And then I just start telling Hank Aaron my story. I reach into my bag.
I'm pulling out my scrapbook here. Aaron hits his 700th. There's a picture of you.
Yeah.
And there's Aaron Shakes Ghost of Ruth. Do you remember that feeling, that day, that moment?
I don't know that I have any feeling that. I was just glad that it was over with, really.
To me, it's the greatest record in sports. And yet, you were facing incredible adversity.
Well, it was tough. There's no question about it. As I mentioned before, it was people like yourself that I leaned on and I got my moral support from. But it was a hard 2.5 years. And I don't talk about it that much until someone bring it up, because it's sad, you know, when you think about it. And yet you look at what McGuire and Soso went through this year, and I think they enjoyed themselves. You know, here's McGuire with his son. He picked his son up out on the field. Well, my kids had to be sheltered. You know, it carved a part of me out that I will never probably restore, never regain.
What part is that?
Well, just not trusting people, I guess.
Henry Aaron got an estimated 900,000 letters during that time. So many, he got a plaque from the post office. Many were sent neither in support nor in hatred, but in defense of Babe Ruth and the Babe's mystique. 12 years earlier, a white slugger, Roger Maris, faced hostility as he assaulted the Babe's single-season home run mark. And now here it came again. Sports writers chimed in. A lot of people thought it was just about baseball. But for the man who had helped break the color barrier in the Deep South Sally League, it had not often been just about baseball.
No matter what it is, you talk about Jackie Robinson breaking it, coming in, having to go through that period of telling people that just give me a chance. You got Dr. King, the civil rights marching, telling people that don't judge me by the color of my skin, but by my character. Then 74, I break this record. That's a lot of things to digest for people, you know, I mean, that don't want to see changes.
He's sitting on 714. Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 715. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
I saw it on TV just like everybody else. And what I remember was, like my father said, thank God it is over.
I'm sitting with Gail Aaron, Hank's oldest daughter, in the lobby of her Atlanta condo building. Gail grew up in Milwaukee till age 12 when her dad's team moved here. When I was in high school compiling my scrapbook, Gail was at Fisk University watching her father's chase from afar under the protection of the FBI. She remembers the day they arrived at her dormitory.
And it was five FBI men around five, and they flashed their badges, and they said, "Miss Aaron, we're concerned about a kidnapping threat. So what we're going to do is we're going to just transform the whole campus. You know, the men that you see cutting the grass, those were FBI men. The men that are painting in the student union, those are FBI men." And they're telling me all of this, and I'm like in shock. And the only thing I could say is, "Does my father know you're here?"
She lived that way for 2.5 years. She lives with the memories still.
Baseball has always been like the all-American white sport, the hot dog, the apple pie. And then when he started to close in on the record, really, white people were angry at my father. They took it personal. They'd rather not say who is the home run king. They have not forgotten who he is. They just don't want to remember. Even when you look at certain TV shows or sitcoms and they're talking about baseball, they say Babe Ruth. They never say Hank Aaron.
I pull out the scrapbook, getting dog-eared now, as I haul it all around Atlanta.
And this is around the time I started this scrapbook.
Okay.
Henry's Homers.
Isn't that something?
Aaron, glad to be back. Memories. Number 700.
And look how young he looked.
Yeah.
We leaf through the yellowed pages. Home run number 701, 710, 711, 712.
714 right here. Shakes Ghost of Ruth.
And then Hank is king of SWAT. 715.
We look at a picture of Hank and his mom. He's smiling, the 715th home run ball held aloft, and his mother is squeezing him tight.
Then see how she's holding him? She was hugging him. He's, you know, it's glad it's over, but she's thinking. She has something else on her mind.
This was right around the time that the cannon went off?
Yes. She thinks someone is shooting at Daddy. She thinks it's a gun. And she said that if they're going to take him, we're going to go together. She was going to go down with him.
I asked Gail who else lived through this with her father. She tells me to call Dusty Baker, one of Hank's closest teammates at the time. I fly to San Francisco, where Dusty is now manager of the Giants. We meet in a restaurant.
That's really good. You got to save some room for that. You guys got to eat some of that.
Thank you. Awesome.
Hank took Dusty and Ralph Garr under his wing when the two young black players came up from the minor leagues in the late 60s. The three went everywhere together. One night in Atlanta.
You know, we're sitting next to Hank in the dugout, and he told Ralph and I that we better not sit next to him that day because there was a death threat. Some guy in a red coat with a high-powered rifle was going to shoot Hank. And so Hank told us that, you know, we didn't want to sit next to him. That, you know, he understood. And Ralph and I were like, nah, Hank, you know, we're down with you, man. Shoot, if you go, we got to go. With the whole game, Ralph and I were looking around for somebody in a red coat, and Hank wasn't even paying attention. And a firecracker went off. I know me and Ralph would swear we were shot. But
these were heavy times, Dusty reminds me, not just for Hank Aaron, but in America. It was a time before marketing took over, a time when being an athlete was often linked to social justice. Muhammad Ali on Vietnam, John Carlos and Tommy Smith, fists clenched on the Olympic podium, and Jackie Robinson and Hank.
You know how many people and kids Jackie motivated? And well, at that time, you know, how many same people that Hank motivated? You know, I mean, you're an example, I'm an example. I mean, you know, I mean, there are tons of us running around right now that Hank had a direct influence on, whether he knew us or not.
I go back to Atlanta for Hank Aaron's 65th birthday in February. Old ballplayers are coming to help celebrate, and old civil rights leaders and governors and congressmen, even the president. I want to watch from the wings as Henry Aaron finally gets his due. A friend of mine told me recently he thought Hank Aaron was the most underrated athlete of the 20th century, and not only because of race. He wasn't flashy, my friend remembered. He just quietly went about his business year after year, never seeking the spotlight. Before the big night, I go to the Braves Museum at Turner Field to have a look. The door is locked. I turn around, and a man in a scraggly beard and stained blue coat is walking toward me.
I'm James McClain. I grew up mostly in Jacksonville, Florida.
James says he lives on the street and hangs out by the stadium collecting autographs. He's been a Braves fan, he tells me, since he came back from Vietnam.
I've been following the Hank Aaron career lifestyle for over 27 years or more. I remember Hank when he was with the Milwaukee Braves.
I tell James my story, why I've come, where I'm going tonight. One last time, I pull out my scrapbook. We sit beneath a bronze statue of Hank and his swing for 7:15.
But Hank Aaron that day seemed like when he come up to plate, it was me. That was me hitting that ball. When I seen everybody look up, it seemed like he stood in home plate for most of an hour watching the ball himself. He had to reach out to get this ball. It was not a perfect pitch. And when he hit it, everybody in that stadium, it seemed like that day, their whole personality changed. And blacks and whites began to actually come together. And it seemed like to me he broke more than the world's record baseball. He broke a barrier between whites and blacks that day.
Do you really think so? I mean,
I
think
know
he
so
broke
in my heart.
Why do you say that?
Because I begin to hear young white kids say that they want to be like Hank Aaron. All of them begin to wear number 44, Hank Aaron. And that was something I never seen. I've seen white kids with Hank Aaron on. And a lot of them today still idolize Hank Aaron.
A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats for the evening's festivities.
The gala for Hank Aaron is black tie. I sit at a table in the back. The Temptations are here, and the singer Jeffrey Osborne, and Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, and Sammy Sosa, and a couple dozen other players, and Ted Turner and Jane Fonda. Bob Costas MCs the event, and Jesse Jackson speaks, and Andrew Young, Jimmy Carter sends a message by videotape, and everyone cheers when the president arrives.
The Honorable William Jefferson Clinton.
This is nothing like the day Hank broke the record, and the commissioner of baseball didn't even show up. Bowie Kuhn had a speaking engagement that night at the Wahoo Club in Cleveland. I leave the gala early, before the president speaks. James is going to take me on a driving tour of Atlanta and Hank's old neighborhood. I find him waiting across from Turner Field.
I thought you were gonna make it.
We cruise the darkened streets.
That was the Capitol. That's the Atlanta Capitol. You see Robert E. Lee's headquarters.
Robert E. Lee's headquarters.
What they called I-20. 84,000 soldiers died in that ravine.
We make a big circle around the city and back to the stadium. I'm leaving early the next morning. We get out to say our goodbyes, and James pulls something out of his coat.
These right here, when they tore down the old Braves Stadium, this was marble off of Hank Aaron's statue. I got a big old, big piece of it. Great. I'll give this to you, this your piece. And that's all I have to give you right now. You got a piece of history right there.
I stand there, holding my piece of stone, and James McClain heads off into the early morning darkness. The tribute to Hank is still going on, and I wonder if after tonight he will finally feel properly recognized. But Hank told me he stopped worrying about that long ago.
When I first got out of baseball, I was an angry man, probably. But now, yeah, I don't have time to worry about that. Sometimes, you know, you think about it, and then it just passes you by, you know, really. And I say, hey, that's all right with me. If that's the way it's going to be, it's going to be, you know. But if you look at my record, you know, you got 1, 2, 3 in all categories, you know, whatever it is, may be, you know. So they can't take that away.
Finished his career with 755 home runs. Me and Hank was produced by Sandy Tola and edited by Sharon Green for the Worldview series of first-person narratives. This is NPR's Weekend Edition. I'm Scott Simon. My dreams, no.